Welcome to All About Capital Campaigns, a podcast that provides fuel for your nonprofit's growth. Each week, Andrea Kilstedt and Amy Eisenstein, co-founders of Capital Campaign Pro, provide practical tips about raising more money for your nonprofit organization. Here are your hosts, Amy and Andrea.
Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Esther Landau, who is the Senior Director of Advancement at the ARC of San Francisco. I am so excited that she is joining us for today's show. Hi, Esther.
Hi, Amy. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, of course, you're one of Capital Campaign Pro's clients, but more importantly, you are doing amazing things with your campaign. So first, let's set the stage a little bit. Why don't you talk about what prompted you to start a campaign and where you're at right now?
Sure. Well, we decided to launch a campaign a few years ago. We did a strategic planning process with all of our key stakeholders, and we created a three-year plan that focused a lot on making our programs more accessible by cutting our wait list. In order to cut our waitlist, we have to hire more staff. In order to hire more staff, we need to pay them more. So that was sort of the genesis of the campaign. The campaign also includes an effort to expand our programs to so that we can serve more people in the three counties that we serve.
I love that, because everybody wants to know, what can you raise money for in a campaign beyond buildings? And I think you've just presented such a beautiful example. And cutting the wait list and adding staff is such an important programmatic aspect and such a good, strong case for support. And everybody's worried about staff and salaries. So I'm curious how you've been talking about that and how it's going so far.
Well, yeah, and we're still midway through our campaign. It's going well. We're still in the quiet phase. But I will say that when we did our feasibility study, that was something that we heard, because we initially led with talking about providing staff not just a living wage, but a thriving wage. And we found, I guess it shouldn't be a surprise, that folks who are parents of ARC participants care a lot about staff wages. Folks who are not directly, personally connected to the ARC, they actually don't, they don't think that should be something that we raise money for. But what was a gut punch to them was hearing that people sometimes waited on the wait list for 2 years.
Interesting.
Never mind the fact that those two things are inextricably connected. They didn't really want to hear about staff pay, but they wanted to hear about how hard it was to wait on the wait list and that it's just so unjust. So we found a way to just reframe the conversation and reshape our donor discussion guide around waitlist.
Interesting. I mean, I think that's such an important lesson. First of all, as nonprofit advocates, you and I want to pay our staff the best wages we can because we want the best talent out there. I mean, the idea that staff is a revolving door at nonprofits because we're paying them such poor wages is really detrimental to our programs and services in the sector as a whole, and not what we're trying to do as a sector. But I don't want to digress too far. I think it's so important that you talked about, you know, those lessons learned and what you heard in the feasibility study process. It's actually not a question I was going to ask you, but you did a guided feasibility study with us at Capital Campaign Pro, and you were involved in the interviews. So why don't you talk just a little bit about that experience and how important it was for you, the leaders of your nonprofit, to be in the room, as opposed to sending a consultant in to do the feasibility study interviews?
Yeah, I would say it was a huge benefit. I'm still, you know, at the time we started this, I was just about 1.5 years into my time at the ARC, and I came in during the pandemic. I hadn't gotten to meet most of the big donors or even really talk to them on the phone. So having a real reason to connect with them and to seek their advice and their opinions was fantastic. And so I not only got to connect with many of those folks, but I also heard their passion for the organization. And I'm like, every single feasibility study interview at the end is like, is there anything else that you want to say? Like nearly every person said, whatever I can do, anything I can do. I love the ARC, you know? So that was so motivating. Yeah, I had so many positive ripple effects for us to do that kind of feasibility study.
Amazing. So let's move on to some of your biggest worries and concerns at the start of the campaign and, you know, talk through if any of them have materialized and how you've overcome them.
Yeah, I think we're still learning some of those things, but, you know, my biggest concern is like, will people give what we think they will give? And in some cases, no, you know, they don't. In some, you know, a few cases, we've had people give more, which has been absolutely delightful. But I think the, you know, and some of the sort of classic worries about cannibalizing our annual fund, that hasn't seemed to take place yet, although we're still in the phase where we're asking some people for bigger gifts. And I don't know if it will affect their interest in giving to the annual fund. But yeah, I would say overall, those worries have not really materialized to the degree that I worried that they would. But, you know, to be candid, I'm still worried. It's anxiety producing. I want it to be so successful, you know.
Oh, I know. You know what? Campaigns are anxiety producing. And I think that what you've done is taken the leap of faith that you need to take and assume for the most part that things are going to be okay. And as challenges arise, you will rise to meet them. So say more about this idea of annual fund, because I think everybody's worried that the campaign is going to ruin their annual fund or impact their annual fund. And you say it hasn't yet. What are some steps you're taking or strategies you're thinking about to make sure that that doesn't happen?
Well, for sure, we want to make sure that when we are having the conversations with donors, that we are acknowledging their longtime annual fund support and how important that is to maintain. And our pledge form actually includes a little optional section at the top where they're pledging to the campaign, but it also says, I also here state my intention of continuing my annual fund support at the amount of blah, and you can state a range. So there are some people who have decided to shift to not give to the annual fund during the capital campaign, which is their choice, but at least we're presenting it, the importance of it to them. And the other thing I will say too, is that right now, like it was a challenge at year end to know, like, who can I reach out to for their regular big annual fund gift? Where are we at in the process of cultivating them? And I don't want to confuse them. I don't want them to just say like, oh, let me just make I'll just make a slightly bigger annual fund gift. And, you know, So there's that sort of the dance of like some people, we didn't ask for an annual fund gift because we're very close to sitting down with them.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was Zan is our advisor and she gave us, you know, wise counsel. We kind of went through the list and decided who would get the usual letter with a personal note and who would not.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, I think the very fact that you are focused on it and worrying about it and thinking about it and strategizing about it, ultimately, it will turn out in your favor. And what we see consistently is that annual funds stay the same or even go up during and after a campaign, because the reality is you're out talking to so many more donors. You're more visible in the community. And it is important to acknowledge. And frequently, and sometimes this is easier said than done, but the idea of saying to a donor, look, first and foremost, we need your annual fund gift because that keeps us going. And your capital gift is whatever you can give over and above. And thinking about it even from two different pots of money. Your annual gift is from cash flow and from your checkbook or your credit card. Your campaign gift, you might think about it from assets, right? From stock or from retirement funds or something like that. So helping your donors think about two different needs, two different pots of giving. Great. I love that you're thinking about it and you're working on it. All right. Any other unexpected challenges that have come up that you wanted to share?
Yeah, this was a surprise. So we have a pledge form that we use that is a Word doc. So, you know, beyond my plugging in the donor's contact information and what we discuss their gift would be. I want to kind of leave it to them of like what time of year they want to give and how they want to do it and what amount. And so it's a Word doc that I send to them after we've had the meeting where the solicitation call, and they've agreed, you know, they've agreed to an amount. And in most cases, people, if they have questions, they'll, you know, what does this mean? I don't know how to do that, fill this out, whatever, they'll reach out. But this one donor felt offended by the pledge form.
Mm.
And they felt that they should be able to, like, they made their commitment and it was, they were going to take care of it over 3 years. And why did we need to know, like, when and how it was coming? And it didn't seem appropriate for me to talk to them about, like, how complex the housekeeping is. They should have to care about that.
Right.
I tried to kind of de-escalate the situation because they seemed offended. It felt, and I realized later, like Sarah Plimpton at one of the coaching calls, she had a great guidance in general around the pledges that now, like looking back, I could have used with this donor, where after you have the solicitation meeting and the donor agrees to a gift, that there then is a phone call to walk through before you send the pledge form, to walk through the questions that you have in the pledge form and to make it very personal and human, because otherwise some donors can feel like the pivot from that like super focused, personal, passion-based kind of conversation is suddenly transactional.
Right.
Which must feel like, I don't know, a punch in the gut. If you're a certain kind of donor, you know, right. And you're accustomed to a certain kind of treatment. So that was a learning. And certainly with this donor, I was able to kind of, I totally understood where they were coming from. I said, you may put in whatever you want in there. And they said, can't I just send in donation payments when I'm ready? And then you can just send me an accounting as part of the thank you of what I still owe. Sure.
Right. For that particular donor. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think there's always going to be sticky situations. I think you did the best you possibly could you never know what's going to come up. Every donor feels differently about all sorts of things. So I think it's interesting that Sarah, and for our listeners who don't know, Sarah is our chief happiness officer who works with us at Capital Campaign Pro and leads our weekly client group coaching calls. And so basically, I just want to make sure I understood her recommendation that you, after the solicitation meeting, you get on the phone with the donor and you, as the development person, actually fill out the form by asking them the questions so that they're not sitting there with a form. It doesn't feel transactional.
Exactly.
Okay, great. I love that. And of course, you know, the obvious logical answer for someone who's feeling rational is, we need this for our record keeping. So we know how much we've raised. We know how much is coming in, that we have a record of it. If, you know, God forbid I get run over by a bus, right? The next person's going to know about our discussion. We're just recording it for posterity and so that we know when we've accomplished our campaign goal. But obviously this one was needed to be treated with kid gloves, right? So listen, I think there are bumps in the road in every campaign. You're hitting them, you're taking them with stride, you're learning as you go, and you're raising tons of money. So that's exciting. Now, one of the things that your Capital Campaign Pro advisor tipped me off on is that you are doing amazing things with video with your donors. So I would love for you to share a little bit about how you're using video to interact with your donors.
Yeah, sure. Early on, we wanted to be sure, you know, our organization serves adults with developmental disabilities, and they're so often excluded from activities and they won't be included in solicitation calls to meet with a donor. They might not even be included in cultivation calls. They would be present at our site. If a donor came to visit, they could meet participants, et cetera. It didn't feel in a way fair to them to engage them in a process that can be frustrating and disappointing. You know, I wouldn't want them to worry about the ARC survival, say, for example. But we really wanted to include their voices. So one of the things that we decided to do was to include QR codes to some videos on our donor discussion guide. So whether we were able to share a video, a link to a video, like in the meeting with the donor and like watch a video together and then talk about it, or whether we could just have it as part of the guide and encourage the person to watch it afterwards. We made a video with a participant and her sister, who is her conservator, and about how hard it was for this young woman to wait on the waiting list. She waited for more than a year on the waiting list. And so it's just a Zoom interview. It is not fancy. It is not produced. It's slightly edited so that, you know, it's short and concise, but you can tell it's not like a professionally produced video, and donors actually really like it for that reason, I think.
Yes.
Because it's very real. And we do have a produced video that we used for an event about our health advocacy program. We include a link to that too, so people can learn about what that program is, because we want to expand that. But that's been one really big piece. That's one way we use video. Another is we have donors who we mostly want to meet with people in person, or at the very least get on a Zoom with them. But we had one couple who declined to do either. They said, can't you just send us a printed proposal? And we used to meet with them in person, but there's been, I think, some age-related issues that have led to them they don't want to meet in person or real time. So we created a proposal. And then I had my executive director create a Loom video of walking through the donor discussion guide, like as if she were talking to them. And then a second video in which she makes the ask. And the ask is also in print in the proposal. So their proposal included the links about the video about the wait list, the link about health advocacy. And then I also, so we mailed it to them. And then I also included, also sent an email with live links in there just in case they didn't know how to use the QR codes.
Yeah.
And they loved it.
I love that.
Yeah. And they agreed. They made our lead gift, which was fantastic.
Oh my gosh, a lead gift. That's amazing. And so did they say that they watched some or all of the videos?
They watched all the videos. They watched all the videos, yeah.
How great is that?
You know, it's not the same as having a conversation, because how much you can pick up from how the other person is behaving, but it feels like the next best thing.
Right. I love that. That is brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, and I should also say, we also made our own little homemade recording of a conversation we had with one of our employment program participants. He's talking about what it means to him to have the support of ARC staff as he works on getting a job and everything. And we made this recording for a customized ask and a customized donor discussion guide that we're creating for a donor who really cares about workforce development for this population, because we knew he would care more about that than the wait list or, you know, the other video that we had. And then finally, I would say I've used video internally, like within our campaign, like things were getting a little stagnant with our steering committee. So there was one day I just decided I'm going to text each of them a video of me, personal video of me encouraging them to connect with the people on their cultivation list. And I know, you know, don't get discouraged. It's a long process, but you got this. And every single one of those committee members responded to me, which never sends email.
Yes. I love that. So are you using any video software or apps or anything that people should know about, or it's just straight Zoom or Loom? Just record a video.
Loom. And I even saw there's something in beta on Zoom. I just noticed that's basically like Loom. So if you have Zoom, it looks like you can create a video for free and just share the link with someone. So
amazing. That is fantastic. I love that. 100% committee response.
I know.
I think that in and of itself, and a lead gift. Now, as you said, in person's better, but when you can't, a video for sure is the next best thing. All right. So let me ask why you decided to go with Capital Campaign Pro as your campaign expertise instead of a more full service or more traditional consultant. We're I would say non-traditional with our guided feasibility study and remote virtual coaching. So why'd you pick us?
Yeah. Well, Andrea is a mentor of mine, so I trust her implicitly. Anything that she's doing is going to be great. And I dipped my toe in the water a few summers ago with that $100,000 campaign boot camp kind of program, just so I could learn the ropes, the ins and outs of this kind of focused campaign. And my ED joined that too when she could. It really helped us think through how we could do something bigger and to not like shy away from it. And I loved the guided feasibility study model. That was a big draw. And, you know, it cost less as a result. I mean, it took more time, but it definitely helped on the budget side of things. And then I think having the peer connection, those coaching calls are fantastic. Like there's always somebody who's further along in the campaign than we are, and where I can sort of be inspired to keep going. And then folks who are just starting out and where I can give some encouragement to them too. So it feels very like a whole little microbiome, a whole little environment that is self-sustaining, you know, in a way. And then plus Zan is our campaign advisor and she's awesome. She pushes us to trust the process and she gets excited when we try new things. And so we feel with her, we feel very supported, but also challenged at the same time. Yeah. So I'm not sure. We didn't even really look at other companies because I had this connection and because we tried it out and it just felt really right for us.
I love that. Well, thank you for saying that. All right. So let's wrap up with some lessons learned. What are your biggest takeaways so far about the campaign process, or what would you recommend to listeners that they definitely do as they're thinking about or heading into a campaign?
Well, one lesson that I learned is that the campaigns aren't some kind of mystery. It's not like a black box or something that you need a special password for. The process that you can follow, but even the process is just a map. It's not like a rule book, and that you can, there's room for you to improvise. There's room for you to kind of follow your own wisdom and your own instincts. Also that it's a team sport. It's not, yeah, I think even if you were to hire a consultant, not Capital Campaign Pro, under no circumstances should you think you're just handing this off to someone else and you can just go back to your annual fund work. Like it really takes everybody rowing in the same direction. It makes it more fun too, because then when you have a success, it's really shared. So yeah, that's so far. Those are some of the big lessons I've learned.
For sure. Well, thank you, Esther, for joining me, for sharing some of your campaign journey with us. I really look forward to seeing you through to the end and seeing you celebrate success, whether that's in a year or 18 months, you are well on your way. And I'm just so proud and honored that you picked us to partner with on your campaign journey. So, and thank you for sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining Amy and Andrea for today's All About Capital Campaigns. To learn more about them and their work together, visit capitalcampaignpro.com. And please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you.